If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now.
I love your show. I just love it.
He calls it as he sees it.
So my daughter turned me on to you, and you're awesome.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub.
You know, as a businessman, I spend my entire day, I work hard for the, you know, make money for my family. So I don't have the time to invest and to know what's going on. You know, and that's why I listen to your show, because you tell it exactly the way it is.
This is the Russ Betts Show on iHub Radio.
Well, have you seen the campaign signs going up everywhere? I don't know where they're. Well, they're up everywhere. It's campaign. It's election season. If you ask me, they all went up way too early. But, hey, what are you going to do? People are excited. And, you know, behind every one of those campaign signs, there's a story to tell. There's somebody who went and staked it. And the person who staked it is either a challenger who's, you know, they got to go out and roll up their sleeves and make their campaign signs and stake them themselves, or maybe a well-funded incumbent who hired a company to go and do it for them. Maybe it's some volunteers out there. But anyhow, those campaign signs are everywhere. Hey, welcome to the Russ Betts Show. I'm Russ Betts, and I happen to have some of those campaign signs out there. And we're going to give you a firsthand look at what it is to run for office. I know, because I'm currently running for office in Desert Hot Springs. For those of you who are regular listeners to this show, you know that I am a council member in the city of Desert Hot Springs. Well, part of the job every once in a while is going back to the voters and make sure they still think you're doing a good job and asking them to vote for you. It's called shameless self-promotion. It's going on everywhere, every city around the Coachella Valley. And we're going to give you a little rundown on the entire Coachella Valley, not just Desert Hot Springs. I want to thank our crack iHub research team for going through today and get me the list of just every city here in the Coachella Valley and who's running and who the candidates are. And, you know, every one of them's a story to tell. Everybody is either hoping that they're going to retain their seat or that they're going to get a chance to sit there in the dais of the city council and be able to start making decisions for the city. I mean, if you go down through the whole list here, you know, starting out in Palm Springs, you got Christy Holstead. She's the incumbent. And she looks like she's got two challengers, Mike McCullough and Deanne Torres. And then Lisa Middleton, what a gift it is that she has received. A dream of everybody who is an incumbent who wants to serve for another term is to not have any challengers. And so Lisa Middleton has received that gift. Nobody decided to challenge her in District 5 in Palm Springs, so she's running unopposed. Basically, you can just sit and watch the show, watch everybody else, and then wait to get sworn in. In Cathedral City, you got Rita Lamb, who's the incumbent, and Al Caravello, who is challenging her. My research team says he's an activist and a commission member. Must be a commission member on one of the commissions there in Cathedral City. And then there's no incumbent running in District 2 because John Aguilar decided he's not going to run again. So that opens up the seat to two challengers, Junior Corrales or Nancy Ross. And so they're one of those two. There'll be a new council member in Cathedral City, and it's just a matter of who gets out there, campaigns the hardest, and gets the most votes. Now, Rancho Mirage finished up their election already. I don't know why they vote on April 14th, but they do. And two incumbents there, Ted Weil and Richard Kite, were both reelected. And I guess the big issue there right now is In-N-Out Burger. We don't know what's going on with that one. You keep hearing it come in and out of the news. And it'll probably keep coming in and out of the news. Palm Desert, Gina Nastandi, the incumbent, and Kathleen Kelly, the incumbent, are both trying to keep their seats. Challenged by Steve Moyer and Evan Trumby. In District 1, Susan Weber, the incumbent, is being challenged by Karina Quintanilla. All right, Indian Wells, you got a whole new slate of candidates because they have something called term limits. And you got Donna Griffith challenging Donna Griffith. These are the candidates. Donna Griffith, Doug Hansen, Kimberly Muzak, Greg Sanders, and Kathy Strong. And the two incumbents are termed out, or they put in a Measure Q that said there's term limits. So termed out is Ted Mertens and Ty Peabody. And I know both of them, both very good and able council members. And I'm sure in the list of candidates that are vying for those seats, we'll have other good ones. But you know, you do lose some experience. Nothing wrong with a fresh look, but when it comes to bringing in benefits from regional bodies that provide grants and funding, having experience there isn't a bad thing. Anyhow, you do have some experience in Newell. Doug Hansen, who served as a council member, is making a run again for that position. In La Quinta, you got Mayor Linda Evans, an incumbent, being challenged by Robert Silk, who's is listed here as a concerned citizen of La Quinta. And then you have council member Steve Sanchez, who is the incumbent, and Kathleen Fitzpatrick, the incumbent, being challenged by Richard Gray. What else we got going here? Okay, we get over to Coachella. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, we got Indio. We forgot Indio. There you go. Indio, you have Lupe Ramos-Amith, an incumbent, being challenged by Frank Ruiz and Eric Lemus. And then you have Glenn Miller, longtime serving there in Indio. He's the incumbent, being challenged by Aaron Turan. And there's a lot of regional interest in that particular race. I'm hearing that a lot of people are taking some interest in that one. Looks like I'm sure Glenn Miller's got a fight on his hands, and see what happens with that one. And then in Coachella, you got Mayor Steve Hernandez, who he's been on the council for a long time. My assessment's done good as mayor, and he's being challenged by Leslie Figueroa, who is a 24-year-old, listed here as a 24-year-old grassroots activist. And then you have the other incumbent, Councilman Emmanuel Martinez, who's being challenged by Neftalia Galarza and Denise Delgado. And I think I did pretty good with those names, and I hope I didn't bore you with that rundown. And then, of course, we have Desert Hot Springs. Now, I just wanted to get that out of the way, let you know each one of those races is somebody trying to figure out what they got to do to get elected. And there's basically 60 days left. And this is what you would call crunch time. Now, I think most candidates figure that most people, except the diehard politicos, the people who just love watching politics, most people just not quite yet paying attention. But around October 1st, that's when the absentee ballots, or I guess they call them vote-by-mail ballots now, that's when they all go out. And so that's the big date that everybody's waiting for and everybody's planning. And your mail, if anybody's going to do a mailing, it's going to land in your mailbox either probably just before you receive that vote-by-mail ballot. And by the way, everybody is voting by mail. There are some drop-off locations that have been set up, I think, in each city. I know Desert Hot Springs has two, one at Mission Springs Water District, another one at the Senior Center on West Drive, where you can go in and drop in your mail on ballot. I'm still trying to find out. Somebody asked me, is there actual voting machines? And I don't think so. I think the centers that have been set up, but I'll check that. And, you know, we're here every week, so we'll get back to you. If I raise a question here, well, you can just hang on and we'll get back to you next week on that one. But the rundown in Desert Hot Springs, how could I leave them out? You've got Mayor Scott Mattis vying for re-election. Again, his challenger, who used to be the mayor, is Adam Sanchez. And I think that's probably going to be the hot, contentious race in Desert Hot Springs. It's already heating up a little bit. And then for council, well, there's yours truly, Russell Betts, and then you got Stephen Gibney, Jessica Gilbert, Robert Griffith, Jonathan Lara, Jason Moore, and Roger Nunez. And everybody's out there working. There's 7 people vying for 2 council seats. The one I presently hold, and then the one that's held by Robert Griffith. At this point in time, what are you doing? You're getting your mailing prepared and ready and done. Some people probably already have them done. It's quite a lot of effort to put a mailing together. You've got to think. Well, what do you want to say? What do you want to remind the voters of? You got to let them know what you're planning for the future. And if you're an incumbent, you want to remind them about, well, here's what I've done, here's what I've accomplished, and I plan to do more, and here's what I want to do. And if you're a challenger and you're in a city where things aren't going real well, well, then you want to start hammering the incumbents. If you're in a city where things are going okay, well, then maybe you say, well, I just want to be a part of the team. It's always easier to run when things are all messed up in a city. And nobody is taking anything for granted. Every candidate out there is working hard. And one of the challenges is for somebody that's new, and, I went through the same thing when I first ran, is you go, okay, well, I've pulled papers, I've qualified. The first thing I do is I got to go gather all these signatures and get those gathered up. And I did that, and I turned them in, and then you wait to see if the registrar of voters, if you got enough qualified signatures, and then the city clerk notifies you and everybody else, yep, they qualified for the ballot. So that's the first hurdle, and it's not much of one, but man, it was a challenge to go around and get those 30 signatures you have to gather during this crisis, because like nobody exactly wants to open their door. And this election is, you saw Desert Sun did an article talking about, how much different it is campaigning this year. Normally you're just knocking on doors, you're standing out in front of the market. You got a lot of face-to-face time meeting people, and now you got to figure out other ways to do that and to reach out to people and meet them and talk to them. And so anyhow, get a little sidetracked here. So the next thing you're going to do is after you get that qualified, well, for some candidates, I'm talking to a couple of them that are working on running, and their first go at it, and they go, oh, wow, I didn't know I needed $500 for a campaign ballot statement. When the ballot goes out, everybody's got a statement. And it's a big, big failing not to have your 200-word statement appear on that ballot. Well, that cost you $500. And somebody who maybe isn't familiar with the process is going, wow, hey, honey, listen, we all agreed I was going to do this. Well, we got to cough up $500 for this ballot statement. And then somebody says, well, hey, I'd like to make a campaign contribution to you. And a young, inexperienced candidate would say, well, great, how do I do that? I guess I need a bank account. You go down to the bank, and the bank says, well, to get your bank account, you first need an FPPC registration number, so you got to do some paperwork. So you look over that big book the city clerk gave you, and you figure out all those forms and figure out which ones you actually need to turn in to get your FPPC number. And I was just talking to a candidate up in Inland Empire, friend, somebody I know, and he says, oh, man, I sent off the paperwork, and I came back rejected. Now I got to do it again. I got all these people who want to give me money, but I can't do it. So anyhow, you got to get a bank account set up, and the bank wants you to have an FPPC number. Anyhow, there's that. And so if you're new to the process, then you're going, okay, now where do I get money? So you instantly start talking to your friends and family, and they're going, they're starting to shun you like you're selling Amway soap. Hey, I'm not paying for your entire campaign. All right. Well, you know what? We've been off for a little while. It's been a little bit of a hiatus. Anyhow, we're going to be back with more. This is Russ Betts on iHub Radio, giving you a rundown on what it's like to run for political office. We got a lot more for you here on this on the Russ Betts Show. Stick with us. We'll be back.
Live from Palm Springs.
Hey, everyone, listen to this, please.
10 years ago, this was a thriving, booming economy, but we're not going to that extent. This thing isn't a total crash.
I want to tell you got the radio voice, my friend.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
Wow, that's really honorable.
Now, here's Russ Betts on iHub Radio.
And indeed, this is Russ Betts. Welcome back to the Russ Betts Show. Good to have you with us. We took a little break there during summer to relocate the iHub studios. And I got to tell you, they did a really good job putting this place together. We're set up for way more than we were able to do in that old location. And, man, I'm looking around at this board. We got all new equipment. This is nice. You'll be able to see it once we... Next week, we're going to be doing the live feed, so you can actually see me. I'm looking at myself in the camera right now. I got to figure out how to move this microphone because it's blocking your view of me. There we go. Now I can see me without the microphone on my face. Anyhow, but we're here, and we're back. We're back. Oh, who? Well, we're not Arnold Schwarzenegger, but we're back. And we're talking about elections and all that it takes, that what you don't see going on. People are now trying to figure out, okay, I got to get my mailing off to the printer, and if they haven't done that already, some people have it ready to go, and then they got to try and figure out what's the best day to launch the mail. You know, things you think about, you don't realize. You know what day the junk mail arrives in the post office boxes? And I don't want to give away too many secrets here to you know, anybody's challenging me for my seat, but you don't want your mail, your campaign mailer, to land in your mailbox on the day that most of the advertising mail goes out. You know, there's that day during the week when there's all that advertising mail for the markets and everybody else, and it's all fun to look through that, but your mail is, your campaign mailer is going to get lost in all that. You want to pick the day that to land when it's quiet, and there are those days, so you've got to time that out. And then so anyway, if you've got that you're thinking about. Now there's other things that come along, like where your name appears on the ballot. Now that's a really critical thing, because there's actually a science to that. And what they say is, if your name appears first on the ballot, that's a good thing. If you're buried in the middle, that's not so good. And if you're the last one, you kind of stand out. And face it, there's people there who don't know who you are. They've decided they're going to vote, and so they're going to pick a spot to vote for. And so top of the ballot is important. Now that's done. There's a system for doing that. And what they do is they just randomly pull alphabet letters out of a drum or a hat or wherever they pull them out of. And then they set the order. So the first one they pulled out was B. And then the second one they pulled out was A. Third one was E, Z, T, L, G. And each one of these you go through and you say, okay, person's last name. B, Betts. I'm Betts. That's me. I'm Russell Betts. Oh, number one, B. Okay, that's good. Well, that means that unless there's somebody else who's, if there's a Bates running, B-A, and I'm B-E, so the third one pulled out was E. So B-E, I'm going to be first on the ballot, it looks like, unless there's somebody named Bates on the ballot, and there isn't. But if there was, they would be first because they're B-A. A is in the second position. And if I'm going too fast for you, oh well. The way it worked out was, that's how they figure out whose name's going to be where on the ballot. And for example, Stephen Gibney, G-I, and you just go through here till you find a G. Okay, he's seventh. G was the seventh letter pulled out. And there's three of them with G's. In this race, you got Gibney, Gilbert, and Griffith. So G-I, and two with I's. So there, okay, so it's going to go down to the B. Okay, Gibney, B, number one. So he'll be first, and then Gilbert, she'll be L. Does she come before Griffith, who's G-R? Yes. So, and that's how it's figured out. And then it goes on down the list. And I don't know who got the last spot. But anyhow, that's how that's done. So, you know, so now everybody's gotten over that fun day. Okay, well, we figured out what the ballot position is. And now maybe you'll position your artwork to show, you know, remind people, vote for number three or vote for number one or whatever it is. And so they get that going on. And then the thinking this election is that there's going to be a whole lot of ballots cast early. People just can't wait to say, you know, because of this national race and how heated it is, the thinking is there's not going to be people taking a lot of time to decide how they're going to vote. And they're going to be real anxious to say, hey, I already voted, and we're going to throw that bum out and put the new guy in, or we're going to keep that guy in and not put the other guy in, whatever it is. This is a very contentious race. I don't need to tell you that. And so the thinking is, usually you have two elections that you deal with. One is the day when the vote-by-mail ballots are mailed out, and then when they go back in. And then you've actually got a voting day, and it's about split evenly, 50-50. Maybe it's starting to edge to more people doing vote by mail. But you basically have to do a mailing, you know, a couple of mailings. And the mailings aren't cheap, by the way. You've got postage you got to pay for. You know, most people are mailing out. In a small city, there might be mailing out 5,000 pieces of mail. So add up the postage on that. A stamp's about 50 cents. So right away, you got $2,500. And so anyhow, all right, there's a lot more going on with all that. We have got an interesting guest coming up. We're going to talk to us about some new developments in the Salton Sea and actually where that one might be going. There's talk all around the Coachella Valley of saying, hey, wait a minute, we pushed for something about a year ago and nobody listened to us. And so they're all now saying, well, we're going to pass resolutions and get you all to listen again. So coming up with us here in the bottom of the hour is Chuck Parker from the Salton Sea Coalition. And this is Russ Betts on iHub Radio. Good to be back with you and back with a lot more in just a bit here on iHub Radio.
Read about it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
No way. That's incredible.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
All right. Welcome back. Good to have you with us here on the Russ Betts Show. We just spent the first half hour letting you know the inside details on elections and there's a whole lot more to it than that, but we're going to take a little break from that because we've got a guest on the line, Chuck Parker from the Salton Sea Coalition. And, you know, there's been a long time that people have been talking how to fix the Salton Sea. And I was somewhere, I don't remember, but the conversation came up and they said, well, they've been talking about that for a long time and spending a whole lot of money. So, Chuck, welcome to the Russ Betts Show. Good to have you with us. Are you there, Chuck?
Can you hear me?
I can now. I pushed the wrong button, but I got it figured out. We got you with us. So you're going, hey, Russ, I'm here. You can hear. Can you hear me, right?
Right. No, thank you for asking me to come on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk about the Salton Sea.
Well, I think we're going to answer some questions for regular listeners and a few electeds around because you're getting ready to knock on their door. It's the Salton Sea Coalition, right? I got that. Did I get that right?
Yes. Yeah, that's our group. We're all volunteers. Most of us, don't have any background, the expert background, but we're learning as we go. And we had a lot of support last year from the cities who all passed resolutions to consider ocean water import as a part of a long-term solution for the sea.
Well, I remember that. Now, you came to Desert Hot Springs for first-time listeners. I'm also a council member in the city of Desert Hot Springs. That's my day job. I just happen to do this gig on weekends for iHub Radio here. But you came to our city and you said, hey, we need you to pass this resolution to support taking a look at import of seawater into the Salton Sea. And it's not a new idea. It's been around for a long time, right?
Yes, it's been talked about for a long time, but I just learned this past week or so that it's actually never been given serious consideration by the state agencies who are responsible for restoring the Salton Sea and controlling the pollution, going all the way back to 2003, when the state agreed to allow Imperial Irrigation District to sell water to San Diego, and that reduced the amount of water running into the sea and has causing all this area to dry up. There's 20,000 acres now.
Well, let's set the stage here a little bit, and I'm forgetting the exact dates, but there was a date when the water from the Colorado River stopped flowing into the Salton Sea, and that caused...
Yeah, that was... That was the beginning of 2018.
Okay, so it was 2018. Beginning of 2018, the water stopped flowing into the Salton Sea, and with no water going in, and that big expanse of water, you get evaporation, and it's getting smaller and shrinking, and getting more and more of the lake bed exposed, and so there's a whole bunch of plans out there floating around trying to figure out what to do. And one of those plans was all the cities got together. You guys got us together. And said, "Hi, we want to seriously explore the sea-to-sea solution." Is that the right thing to call it?
Yeah, that's been called a number of things, but that's a good description. Most people would try to bring it from the Sea of Cortez in Mexico because it's closer and it's mostly downhill, but it could also be done from the Pacific Ocean in San Diego County. Okay. But then you have, you know, other problems, like it's a little higher. You'd have to pump the water over the mountain. But either way.
But what we said, well, how long ago was that, a year, year and a half ago? All the cities got together, every single city in the Coachella Valley, the tribes as well, right?
Yeah, the Torres Martinez tribe and the College of the Desert trustees joined all nine cities to support the idea of exploring ocean water import as a long-term solution, because there's no source of fresh water. So we're thinking, let's go get some ocean water and put it in there and at least keep the level of the sea up so you don't have all this toxic dust blowing and hurting people's health and damaging our economy.
Okay, so you would think that with all those people, all those entities saying, hi, state, we think you ought to take a look at this, you think they would at least give it a look. And I sat in, I listened in on one of those meetings, and I don't think it was even an afterthought. If somebody hadn't mentioned it during the meeting, I don't think they would have brought it up at all. They're really not interested, are they?
No, they have been looking at the same kinds of small little ponds around the sea for almost 20 years now. And for example, the first project they were going to build at the south end of the sea was called the Species Conservation Habitat, almost 4,000 acres. It was supposed to have been completed in 2016. They're still saying that they need another year to get the proper permits. So it's like endless delays and many, many studies, which cost tens of millions of dollars. And the problem goes all the way back to where they set the wrong priorities, I believe. And then they came up with solutions that were too expensive. So they concluded that, and I didn't know this till recently, the Department of Natural Resources said, well, we've got 75 years to solve this problem. So let's just do it a little at a time as money becomes available.
Well, I sat in on the energy and environment down at Coachella Valley Association of Governments when we had a presentation on this. And that was 6 years ago. And they said, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time on this thing. And at the rate that the sea is drying up, so you're telling me somebody thinks we have 75 years to fix this right now?
Well, the whole water transfer from Imperial County to San Diego is going to go on for 75 years. So they said, well, then we've got 75 years to work on this. And it's ridiculous. It's unacceptable because by that time, most of the sea will be dried up. It'll be with two very concentrated polluted brine ponds in the middle, and all that exposed area will be subject to blowing dust, and we'll see big storms coming into the Coachella Valley and the Imperial Valley, and the kind of dust that'll give people cancer and kill them.
Did I hear somebody say they were talking about covering that with gravel? Was that one?
Yeah, that was one that has been. That's one of the measures of dust control that they have used in other places like Owens Lake.
Well, it didn't work really well there because the dust blows over the gravel and then you got to put more gravel, right?
Yes. But one of the things is that you can also see in these previous studies, they pick projects that say, well, here's a project that'll cost $800 million, but it'll take $50 million a year of maintenance. So naturally, the contractors and the companies who are going to do that work are in favor of it because it's like a perpetual money machine. And the taxpayers are going to pay for it, and it's not going to fix the problem.
All right, so if I'm going to look at this problem and I'm going to sit there objectively and say, okay, what do we have to do? We got no source of water, and so we can either cover over what's there or we can bring some water in if we have a source of water. And so all the cities and your group said was, hi, let's please get a serious study. And they had how many millions of dollars that they could have taken a little bit of those? Was it 128 million, something like that?
No, there's actually, Russ, there's actually $507 million available to work on salt in the sea. And all we're asking for is $2 million to do the comparative engineering review so that the engineers go in and look at all the 11 projects that were submitted pick the best one, and then when that's done in 2 years at the most, it's ready to go as long as we can get the money and negotiate a deal.
Okay, but they didn't even look at that yet, right? Even though all the cities, the tribes, and College of the Desert, and wasn't Imperial Irrigation District also?
Imperial County has endorsed the idea in the past.
Okay, so even though these people said, hey, guys, we want you to look at this, they said no.
Right.
I mean, they didn't do it. And even
they didn't, no.
And so now what happens in government, and I know this, is if you want to put in a road, or heck, if you want to put in a stop sign, first thing you have to do is have an engineering study. You have to have something that supports either how you're going to put in the road or that putting a stop sign in here is going to be safe and the right thing to do. I mean, you don't do anything without an engineering study. And so you would think that after all these cities said to, examine this, they would know, okay, well, they all want us to do this. Okay, we got this $500 million plus. Let's go do an engineering study because that's what they wanted us to do. They just totally ignored it, right?
Well, they didn't completely ignore it, but what they want to do is a different kind of study, which says, let's look and see if we can even do a water transfer. Maybe there's something else that's better. And there's the Salton Sea Authority, for example, is trying to push the old solutions, which are a bunch of little ponds and dikes around the sea, or a North Lake plan, which would only cover a fraction of the sea and cost as much. The thing is that these small projects will cost as much as bringing water in.
Okay.
So
now some people are sitting there saying, well, what good does it do to bring in salt water? And I think people don't realize the Salton Sea is so salty after all these years that what I heard was for the first 7 years of sea import, the salinity of the Salton Sea will actually go down. Or if you could magically fill it up with water from the Sea of Cortez, the ocean, it would be less salty than it's been for decades. Is that correct?
Yes. Right now, the Salton Sea is a little over twice as salty as the ocean. So if you add ocean water, it's going to become less salty as a whole. Then we have time to develop solutions for how to desalinate enough water to make it, again, water that birds and fish can live in. There is technology.
When you say desalinate, some people think, oh, that's really expensive. And to desalinate to the level of drinking water is probably really expensive, right? But you're not talking about desalination to the level of drinking water. You're just talking about getting enough out of there that the wildlife can survive in it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it could be, you know, there are people who've researched it and they can bring it even to drinking water level, but and they would be able to sell the salt or dispose of it in some other way. But from our point of view, that's the second phase of the project. The first phase is simply get enough water in there, because really the environmental laws required them to guarantee that environment wouldn't be damaged before they transferred the water. And they went ahead and transferred it anyway.
Okay.
And then they've done all these studies to justify what they did, and there is no justification, not really.
Give me the name of that agency that didn't do what all these cities down here around the Salton Sea said they should do. What was the name of that agency again?
It's the California Natural Resources Agency.
Okay, so they didn't.
And the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Okay, so now your group said, hey, you know, they didn't do what you guys all said. Thank you very much for giving us this resolution that we can present to them and these instructions. And so now you said, okay, we're going to go around again. And this time you came to us with something a little more specific, right?
Yes, we ask the cities to pass a resolution that says, please, to the Natural Resources Agency, let's use $2 million of that $500 million to do the engineering, comparative engineering on these projects, so that when it's done in 2 years, if we're ready, if the government is ready to import water, the project is ready to go because the engineering's been done.
All right. So we're gonna examine exactly what's involved in all that and see if we can get that one to work. But right now we're up against a break. Chuck, can you hang on?
Sure, I'll be right here.
Okay, all right. We're on with Chuck Parker, the Salton Sea Coalition, working the issues of the Salton Sea along with us here at iHub Radio. This is Russ Betts, and we'll pick up this conversation after these important messages from our sponsors.
thank you for educating so many of us. I think you're the best.
We are the people in your neighborhood.
With great power comes great responsibility.
This is The Russ Betts Show.
Okay, we're back. We're here on the line with us is Chuck Parker from the Salton Sea Coalition, and we're trying to figure out why it is that a state agency, and I keep forgetting their name, but I'm going to try to remind everybody as many times as possible, why a state agency has ignored 9 Coachella Valley cities, the Torres Martinez tribes, and the College of the Desert Board of Trustees, who said, hey, we at least want to look at bringing in water from the Sea of Cortez to solve the Salton Sea problem. And that's what it is, Chuck, right? Basically, you've got to do engineering to make this work, right?
Yes, and you've got to give it a serious consideration and not just pass it off or say, well, that's not going to work.
All right, so you're going around to all the cities now with a sample resolution for them to look at, review, and pass. Have you got any takers yet? Any of the cities passed it yet?
Yes. Coachella passed the resolution, the city of Coachella, on August 7th, and Desert Hot Springs, your city, thanks to your efforts, passed it unanimously this past Monday on September 1st. So we have 2 cities already.
Boy, wasn't that a loaded question. I already knew the answer to that. But hey, you know, we gotta let everybody here on the radio follow along in this story. So, okay. All right. So, and the resolution, as I understand and I remember, was take $2 million of the $500-plus million you got and do the engineering study that's the precursor, that's the prerequisite to actually putting in the stuff. And they do the engineering study, and the engineers say, yes, here's basically the outline of what you got to do, where you're going to do it. Surveyors go out. This is where it's going to run. Hi, we got a working plan. If you fund this, it will work. That's what the engineering study's about, right?
Yes, exactly. And the other part of it, it's a 2-part resolution. The other part of it is that it's the Department of Natural Resources or Natural Resources Agency. They are supposed to have community involvement in this process. And so far, they have not invited any of the cities to send a representative to those meetings. And we think it's very important for the cities of the Coachella Valley to be represented in the Natural Resources Engagement Committee so that we can have people continually talking about this idea that we have of bringing in ocean water and not let it be forgotten or passed over.
So let's look at what our future is going to look like. If let's just say that somehow every city in the Coachella Valley passes this resolution, I'm guessing they will, and all of a sudden the state agency says, all right, what's the name of that state agency again? I keep forgetting. I'm going to write it down.
Natural Resources.
Okay. Natural Resources says, wow, this is the second time they've come to us with this. I guess we better take them seriously. Okay, we're going to do this. And they do the engineering study. Now, they got to put that out to bid?
I believe that's the process, or maybe they can. I'm not sure, but
now,
they
I'm
they could.
I'm supposed to know that better than you do. So we're going to say they have to put it out to bid, and so that's going to take a while. They have to review the bids, accept the bids. Let's just say that's 3 to 6 months, right? And then
right.
The engineering study is going to take what, a year to 18 months?
Oh. Yeah, well, estimate has been between 1 and 2 years. Yeah, so about that, a year to 18 months. So
okay, so let's just say now you got 2 years just for the engineering study. And meanwhile, all this time, that sea is drying up, right? And then you've got,
yes.
And then let's say they put this thing in, they've calculated the cost, the funding comes through, everybody says, yes, this is what we're going to do, and it's going to take some time to build that. And that estimate I heard was 5 years to build it, the canal that would, or the system that would feed the water in, is that right?
Yeah, I think so, 3 to 5 years.
All right, so let's just say 3 years. We're just figuring this out. So you got 5 years total. I think that's what I remember. 5 years total before the water starts coming in and all of it. And you know, if this dream happened, you'd actually have you've seen all these, the old lakefront hotels and the docks now that just go to nowhere except, you know, dried up lake bed with no water anywhere near them. You'd actually get this thing back to full level again, right? Then all the recreational boating and everything else will be back. And why is anybody against this?
I don't think it, most people are not against it. It's only the people who've been delaying things for 20 years that are against it. People who have been, have a vested interest in pursuing solutions that have been too expensive or won't work. So it's a very small group of people, but they are in power right now. They're in control of the natural resources. They're in the Salton Sea Authority, which is a special body that's made up of the counties and the water districts. And the water districts are making a lot of money off of this deal. As we sit here and worry about the dust, Imperial Irrigation District is making made $120 million last year selling water to San Diego.
Okay, well, they can keep selling water to San Diego. All we want them to do is, not get in the way of getting the sea back to the level it should be, right? That deal's done, all right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that deal is done.
We're not getting Colorado River back to the Salton Sea again anytime soon, right?
Right, not likely.
Okay, so now you've got to either let the thing dry up or you got to find another source of water. How far away is the Sea of Cortez?
It's 140 miles
and it's
from
all
the Sea of Cortez to...
And it's all, except for about 50 feet up, it's all downhill. It all basically flows.
Yeah, once you get to the border, which is 40 miles, and there's a rise there that's 40 feet high, you have to pump the water 40 feet, which isn't very high. It then falls 238 feet to the Salton Sea. You could even generate enough, more than enough electricity to pump the water as it falls down to the sea. And just to compare... The Los Angeles Aqueduct that was built in 1915 all the way from Owens River up in the Sierras, over 220 miles, that was built in 1915, and that's how the city was able to grow. The Colorado Aqueduct or California Aqueduct took water from the Colorado River out in at Parker Dam, Arizona, another 220 miles. They had to pump it over high mountains and big tunnels. It goes right past Desert Hot Springs, but it's underground.
So wait a minute.
That was done.
What you're telling me is digging a canal or a way to transport water from one place to another isn't any kind of new technology, right? I mean, they've been doing this for a long time.
No, it's like the lifeblood of California. California, as we know it, wouldn't exist without major water projects.
Well, this can't be much of a challenge for these engineers. I mean, it sounds like the real challenge is just getting engineering started. The engineers probably going, hey, it's a piece of cake. I mean, they could go back and study what the Romans did with the aqueducts, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah, it's that
simple.
Old.
Simple. Who's holding this thing up? I keep with Natural Resources. That's the name of the agency, Natural Resources?
Yes, Natural Resources. Then there's two others that are helping them, Fish and Wildlife and the State Water Department. But
all
Fish
right.
and Wildlife, sorry.
No, it's okay. I was going to tell you, good luck. I mean, I really appreciate your efforts. You guys are all volunteers doing all this work. Chuck, I got to have you back again to update us on this as you get more cities online. And I really want to thank you for being on the Russ Betts Show today.
Oh, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it. It's always a pleasure. You make it very easy. You have a great way of interviewing.
Well, sorry. Thanks. I hope I don't interrupt too much. But anyhow, but what's going to interrupt us is I got some bills to pay around here. We got some really important messages coming up from our sponsors. Chuck Parker, Salton Sea Coalition, thank you very much. And we're back with more.